Good afternoon. This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Dan Hurley. A little later, we'll hear about the status of city manager Harry Black. But first, on a national level, I've always thought the MacArthur Genius Awards that support people who show exceptional creativity sounded like a great idea and has a brilliant title. Over the years, I got the opportunity to know one MacArthur awardee, Bill Strickland from Pittsburgh. He's amazing. The local version of this concept is the People's Liberty Hale Foundation's Fellowship, or the People's Liberty Hale Fellowship, really. Each year, People's Liberty, an initiative of the Carol Ann and Ralph V. Hale Foundation, selects two fellows to research, plan, implement, and present the results of a big idea that has the potential to change our community's future. Each awardee receives $100,000 to provide a stipend, support for research, and project-related costs, as well as workspace at People's Liberty itself. I am joined this afternoon by two of this year's, the 2018 Hale Fellows, as well as the CEO of People's Liberty and one of the 2017 Hale Fellows. For this year, Elisa Hoffman, who served one term on the Board of Education of the Cincinnati Public Schools, will pursue a project that she calls School Board School. Nicole Armstrong will focus on a project that she has entitled Queen City Certified, Equity at Work. And Tamia Stinson, who was a 2017 Hale Fellow, did a project entitled Tether, which was designed to connect image makers and people in the design area with each other here in Cincinnati. They are joined by Vice President and Senior Program Manager for the Carol Ann and Ralph V. Hale U.S. Bank Foundation and CEO of People's Liberty, Eric Avner. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, emailing talk@wvxu.org, and we're also on Twitter and Facebook. Welcome, everybody, and congratulations. This is always a wonderful time when, you know, a new year is starting, new awardees, new fellows, and also the perspective that Tamia can bring with what she has accomplished in the past year.
I have lots of insights.
Lots of insights. In fact, let's just start there.
Oh, okay. Now you put me on the spot.
Why not? So tell us a little bit about what your project started out to be, what it turned into, and how that process took place.
So I originally wanted to do, and I didn't have a name at first, I originally wanted to do a community of image makers, which is anybody from photographers to hair and makeup to stylists, which is my background, to producers, to creative directors, everybody that would be behind the scenes basically on a photo or video shoot. And I knew a lot of these people, and I wanted a way to bring everybody together and connect everybody. Mm-hmm. And to collaborate on a project that we could all be a part of, that we could all be proud of. So that was the initial idea. And I think I mostly did most of that. So we've created the Tether Source Book, which is basically a really dope phone book. It is a portfolio with the work of over 25 teams of local image makers that everybody contributed to. We had a big party to launch that launched in December. We've created an online directory because people wanted to make it easier to find each other. So if you're looking for somebody to collaborate with and you're on this shoot and you need a stylist, where do I go? Who do I contact? How do I find somebody? So we have an online platform called the Tether Talent Directory that's at tethercincinnati.com, where you can go in and literally search food and stylist and come up with somebody who can make your burgers look awesome. And we've also done events because I've noticed that face-to-face events tend to make the most difference. You know, Instagram is fantastic, but having a one-on-one conversation with somebody and being able to look at them when you're talking to them makes a huge difference, especially if you're going to be on set with somebody for 12 hours a day. So mm-hmm. we've pretty much done the things that I wanted to do. We wound up doing, I found, again, that events were more important than I thought they would be. I have a little bit of a background in publishing, so I knew how much darn work was going to go into the source book, and it did. And the process has been a really cool one in terms of sort of learning I mean, I already had a decent idea of it at home, and getting over the idea of perfectionism, which is an issue for me and, quite frankly, I think a lot of women, honestly, and figuring things out as you go. So I tend to be a person that likes to have everything figured out, and then I'll tell you about it. This project will completely erase any of those ideas from your head. You might think you have it all figured out, and it's just not possible. And honestly, it's probably not the best way to work. So I've learned a lot as far as putting together a big project and what that could look like.
Well, one of the things that's happening here in the studio is, as Tamia is talking, she's looking over the two 2018 fellows, and I think was sort of giving them some cues and clues about what was going on. And that's part of this whole process of bringing people together so that they can share. Let's begin with the awardees right now. Elisa, your project, the school-related project, sounds like it's a school-related project. It's not just a school-related project. Really grows out of your personal experience. How did this come about? Where did the idea bubble up from?
Yeah, so I think after the November 2016 presidential election, like lots of people, I was trying to figure out how do I make my biggest impact right now? I was serving as a member of the Cincinnati Public School Board and deeply believe that's one of the biggest ways to impact our community is by public service. And lots of people were deciding they were going to run for office. And so I started looking at those organizations, lots of organizations springing up because so many people around the country and locally were deciding, I'm going to throw my hat in this ring and I'm going to run for office. And so you saw this real surge in people's interest in running for office, and that's fantastic. And there were a lot of programs or organizations that were supporting those folks, either new ones or old ones that were expanding their capacity, and their goal was to help get people elected. What I was realizing, though, was that they weren't focused on whether or not these people were going to actually be effective once they were in office.
The difference between campaigning and governing.
Exactly. And so as I tried to think about what could I contribute at this moment, it really was this experience that I had had as a school board member. And the idea being that I could help create this program that would be for people who are interested in running for school board in the next 1 to 3 years, where we would really help them gain the skills, the experience, the knowledge, the mindsets needed to be effective day one when you sit down in your role, and that we could really build a deeper, more qualified, more diverse bench of equity-focused elected officials who aren't just ready to run but are ready to serve.
I want to be clear here, though. This isn't just for people running, certainly not just for the Cincinnati Public School Board, but not just for school board people. It could be people who are running for other public campaigning for other public offices too, right?
That's the goal eventually. Year one, the goal is to do school board in Cincinnati Public Schools.
Strictly focused on Cincinnati Public Schools.
So the idea is that each of our school boards has so much local context and is so different in how we're set up, the issues we're facing. And so proof of concept, year one, will be here with Cincinnati Public Schools. But one of the great things about having spent my entire career, about 20 years working in education, is that I have a network of folks who are serving their communities in these roles all over the country. And one of the things that I found over the last year or so as I was researching this was it really didn't matter if you were, I talked to friends on school board in Rio Grande Valley in Texas, a small town in Maine, out in Minneapolis in West Virginia. Didn't matter where you were. We all found that we had kind of this similar things we wish we knew when we sat down in this role. And so it really is a need everywhere. And so the idea is we start local and then we expand from there.
Nicole, your project also grows out of personal experience. And then you've tried to see how that might be useful to more people. Tell us a little bit about that personal experience and then how you framed the project.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I think that this concept, Queen City Certified, is sort of a culmination of experiences that I've had over the years. And, I've always been passionate about gender equity and social justice. And I've had an opportunity to work in both the for-profit and nonprofit sector, most recently in social innovation, working with communities to sort of come up with ideas to address pretty hairy big problems. And I've been so incredibly inspired by the women that I've worked with and met throughout my years and throughout my career. And I've seen firsthand how gender discrimination shows up in the workplace, whether that's through unfair pay practices or a lack of women in leadership, even to policies that make it really difficult or sometimes impossible to balance work and family responsibilities. You know, and even personally, I've experienced that. You know, I found myself looking for a job this past summer. And, you know, was finding it frustrating that there was a real lack of transparency around policies in different companies. And it was hard to understand or to know whether companies shared the same values of equity. And so I thought to myself, as I was going through this process, wouldn't it be amazing if there was a way to identify and celebrate companies that support equitable practices, you know, and really highlight them in our community. And I think Cincinnati is so innovative, and I've seen firsthand how many caring and committed people there are. So I know that we could be a leader in this.
So is the idea that a company is going to get certified and has some mark or some logo that it can say, we have gone through a process and we have committed to these things?
Exactly. So the idea is that the certification process will be accessible to small and large businesses. And it'll function similarly to a LEED certification, where it'll be a points-based model. Mm-hmm. So there'll be a variety of factors that companies can earn points based on their own practices. So equal pay for equal work, women and people of color in leadership, interviewing and recruitment practices, all these different types of scenarios, they'll be able to earn points and achieve various levels of certification. And they will receive a symbol or a mark that lets people know that they have been certified. And so as people are looking for jobs or looking to work with companies, they'll be able to say, you know what? I want to work with them.
Okay. Eric, you had the problem, but also the nice situation that 101, as I understand it, applications for the fellowships this year. What was it about these two that made them stand out? And there was a jury involved here. It wasn't just you.
Yeah.
But what made these stand out?
Yeah. I mean, to be clear, I don't get to even have a vote. I mean, so we basically set up this platform that allows people who have great ideas, who have passion, who have personal experience in issues to be able to bring them forward, and we can give them a lift, give them some funding, give them support, give them mentorship. I think what both of between Nicole and Elisa's ideas, I think they both sort of exemplified this notion of, here's two people who have incredible experience in what they're talking about. They know it, they feel it in their gut, they have a passion for it, but also just like have a drive and know, have a pretty good idea of how to deliver on that. And then have this bigger idea of which is something I sort of more share, that is I want Cincinnati to be known more and more as this launching pad for ideas, where things are started in Cincinnati and then they take over the world. And that whether it's a locally based certification system that can be for big companies, but even with the tiniest organizations, that could start here and base it on and set Cincinnati up. That's a school board education program could be starting here. That Tether starts here. This idea of networking, networking image makers and freelancers in a community.
Elisa, what are some of the things that you learned once you got on the school board that you didn't know when you were campaigning? And campaigning can be ego boosting. It can be scary. It takes all of your energy. When that's over, though, what is it that you found out that you didn't know?
Yeah, that list is long, Dan. So, but I think one of the things that was really interesting as I was researching this project was that, you know, as I was saying earlier, a lot of these, the things that I wish I knew because I think I could have been effective earlier in my tenure on the board were things that everyone I was talking to, no matter where they were serving, were saying the same thing. So some of them are what I call more like nuts and bolts skills and knowledge. So things like the thing that came up most often in all of my conversations was around district finances, right? So like I would talk to people who say, you know, I manage multi-million dollar budgets at work, but it is not the same as trying to understand public funding.
Why is it not the same?
Yeah. So, I mean, right, just trying to figure out what do we get from the federal government, from the states? What do we get from local funding? What's coming from grants? How can we use Title I funding? All of these things. And then what does that all mean for each school's individual budget? There was just so much to learn. But there was also just skills involved. I think one of the other ones that came up often was how to lead in a public role. And again, you know, talking to lots of folks who are tenured in their positions at work who say, I lead 15 people in my day job, or I'm vice president of my division. But leading in a public role is very different for lots of reasons, including that every single decision you make is incredibly public. And what does that mean for how you lead? And then just, you know, everyday things like, what does it mean for your day job, for your family's commitments, for all of those other commitments you have? You know, I know for myself and for lots of other folks I talked with, we are parents in the district that we're also serving on the school board. So that parent-teacher conference is a little different now. Going to your kid's basketball game is a little different with all the questions that you get from, quite frankly, people who elected you to serve them and answer your question, even if you're at your son's basketball game. And so I think all of that together was really quite the learning curve.
Nicole, you talked about this certification process. Have you had a chance yet to sort of test this out with different size companies in terms of their interest in pursuing something like this? And does it affect, you know, whether it's a mid-size, mid-corp, or a large corporation or a family-owned business? Have you got any sense of who's going to be open to this?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, some people have already started reaching out who have shown interest, even from smaller nonprofit organizations to a restaurateur. So I think that a lot of different businesses are going to be interested in certification. And the beauty of the points-based model is that it really makes it accessible for small businesses and large businesses because, you know, we understand that change can't happen overnight. And a lot of these policies can take time, especially in large bureaucratic organizations. But what we can start to do is take a look at what they're doing well and celebrate that and also provide a framework for them to do better. So this points-based model will allow companies to get different levels of certification. So even if you're a small mom and pop, you'll probably still be able to enter in on some level with longer term goals, you know, of going up in certification as the years go by. So I really want to make it accessible for everybody.
Will this ultimately be supported by companies paying to go through the process?
I envision in the future. So this first pilot for the first year, nobody will be paying because this is sort of the prototype.
Okay.
In the future, I do envision it as a social business in the sense that companies could hire people to train them in the certification, but I envision it as a sliding scale. So if you're a small company, I want to make it as affordable as possible. If you're a large company, maybe you can pay a little bit more because I want it to be as accessible as possible.
Right. But sustainability is going to be important.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
So the fact, Tamia, that we have had this burst of filmmaking in Cincinnati,
yeah,
has that been a target market for your image makers?
Well, it's a slightly different industry. Film tends to be a bit more unionized than you would see on a photo or video shoot. But there's definitely some overlap, especially when it comes to behind-the-scenes talent like hairstylists and makeup artists and wardrobe and all that fun stuff. So there is an opportunity, I think, to connect us with all the exciting film things that are going on and also to create exciting projects that the entire community of creatives can get in on. You know, Cincinnati has a really great base of people who are big thinkers and have ideas and can do cool stuff, which is what Eric was kind of alluding to before. And I think there's an opportunity to create a larger community of people who are willing to give their input to raise Cincinnati, to elevate our profile and, you know, the type of things that come out of this city.
Eric, what year are we in for the Hail Fellow?
Well, this is our fourth round of Hail Fellows.
Okay.
So after this, there'll be probably one more year of it. So we're in our third year of five for People's Liberty as a whole. We signed on for a five-year period of this. And it's kind of interesting that the fellowships get a lot of publicity because they're really the biggest dollar amounts.
Right.
And we get to know these people so well over the course of a year. But every quarter, there are new opportunities that come through People's Liberty. For example, like next week, we have another round of project grants opening up already. On the 21st, actually, we have an information session at People's Liberty for another round of eight $10,000 grants to do smaller projects, six-to-month projects in neighborhoods. We have an installation in our storefront, which is another grant program that opens this Saturday. It's called Good King, and Ariane is creating this amazing installation in our storefront right now, and then we're even hiring more people. So as of this Friday, we're still hiring young designers, young videographers, writers, bloggers to come work for us at People's Liberty. So we're constantly giving more and more opportunities for people to hopefully take that passion that they've been talking to their friends about and try to do something with it.
Okay. So what do you expect in terms of people who can help feed what you're doing? How are you going to find – I'm looking mostly at the new fellows because they've got to figure this out. How do you find the people who are going to take your idea and turn it into a program? Nicole?
Yeah, I can start. That's an absolutely great question, and I'm glad that you asked it. My goal for this year is to launch this prototype with 1 to 2 large businesses and 3 to 4 small businesses. So I'm hoping that, if you are out there and you're a business owner or you have a small business or you're a business leader and you're interested in certification, to reach out because we are more than willing to work with you.
Do you think women-owned businesses might be more open to this?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I think time will tell. I think women-owned businesses will have a unique perspective because they've probably been through their own experiences facing gender discrimination. And so they're going to have, a unique perspective around that and their own experiences, and they'll bring that with them. But I also think that there's a lot of male allies out there who would be interested in pursuing gender equity in their businesses to retain and attract top talent, and also to grow their organizations. I think we do have a lot of male allies out there, so I expect to hear from both.
Have you talked to the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber or to the RCBC?
They are on my list of people to reach out to. Yeah, I have great connections, and that's what's amazing about People's Liberty is that they really are a team that helps you connect with those folks. So that is definitely something in my future.
So, Elisa, in your case, I'm sure there's lots of current and former school board people who would be glad to tell you exactly what you should do. But where do you think you're going to find the best advice or team of advisors?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think you're right, though, that there is there's a small group of people who actually understand what it means to be a school board member, having served themselves. And I've been very lucky that both current school board members and former school board members, as I've been tossing around this idea for the last year, have all been saying, let me know how I can help. But I think it takes a larger group than that, right? So that's everyone from people who are directly impacted by our school system. So that's, teachers, other staff members, that's parents, that's students. One of the last big projects I worked on as a school board member was what we called our Student Voice Project. The fact that we tended to be able to hear from everybody in the community except those people most directly impacted by what we were doing. So we wrote and passed a policy where we worked with a group of students from every one of our high schools to figure out how to get their input. So I think really going through those networks.
One of the things I saw in some of the literature about your project was we talked a little bit about the financing side, but also the use of social media. We all know elected officials. We know of elected officials who have gotten themselves into trouble with social media, posting on Facebook, posting on Twitter, and all of a sudden, because they're elected officials, everybody's paying attention and are glad to grab a headline and do something with that. So that's a whole nother area that's interesting. I just wonder if people are going to be able to know that before they really get into it as opposed to be just heard.
That's one of the things.
And we have about 30 seconds.
Oh, one of the things that when I said I talked to people all over the country about this that came up as well as, what does it mean for your parent-teacher conference or et cetera, was what does it mean for your social media presence as well and how that changes when you're an elected official but even when you're campaigning.
Okay. Well, I want to wish all of you the best as you pursue your big ideas to improve our community. And Eric, all of your ideas, you've got more than anybody I know. I have been joined this afternoon by the two 2018 Hale Fellows, Elisa Hoffman and Nicole Armstrong, and a 2017 Hale Fellow, Tamia Stimson, and as well as CEO Eric Avner of People's Liberty. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show has been Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Selena Reeder. The technical director, Joss Elstro. And we have had the help of Kevin Reynolds. Archives of our programs are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.